When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento. Sacramento, Sacramento, Sacramento.
Turner Sparks just got married and has moved home to America after 12 years living in China. Sir Michael Ira Kaplan has two kids, a wife, a job, and has spent his entire life in the USA. Neither one can figure their country out. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 129. My name's Turner Sparks.
And I am Michael Kaplan, and we got the episode number right this time, right?
Because
I got a lot of hate mail about this.
We got it right. You can find me at Turner B. Sparks on Twitter. You can find Kaplan at Cap in America on Twitter. Also, we're on Instagram? Are we on Instagram?
We are, of course. We're cool. I'm Cap in America. We're Lost in America, and you're Turner Sparks.
Yes, on the podcast today, we have Ollie Horn. Stand-up comedian Ollie Horn, Brit. British.
We haven't had enough Brits on this pod.
We haven't had it. You can never have enough Brits. They got all those words.
Fancy words.
Take the lift. Stuff like that.
Chips.
Yeah, he's been living in Japan for the last years. I met him out in, we met in Hong Kong at a comedy festival, but then I played his club in Japan.
And we actually haven't had enough Japan on this. Really?
Have we had any?
Well, we had our friend James Brodus stop by at some point.
We had Jimmy Brodus about 2 years ago.
Have we had anybody else talk about Japan?
No, that's it. So we're going to have to really get the scoop. We got an expert on. This is going to be fun. But before all that, Kaplan, I got some shows to promote. This is what I have coming up. First of all, the big one, if you're in New York City or the surrounding areas, you got to come out to the Friars Club on Friday, June 7th. I will be recording my live album, my first ever album of stand-up comedy. I'll be doing a full hour. I also have an announcement. I have the opening comedian, the guy who's hosting the show, so it's going to be two comics.
Who's that?
It's myself and another guy, Luke Thayer.
Oh, Luke Thayer.
Hilarious stand-up comedian. He tours all over the U.S. I just asked him to do it. He's in. So it's going to be him and then me. It's going to be a blast, and you guys hanging out. So
don't even say the New York. People should come from all over the country.
Fly in. This is a once in a lifetime.
This is why you accumulate freaking flyer miles. Burn them out.
This is why you get friends, because then they have shows at the Friars Club, and you're never going to get to go other time in your life. What are you going to go to your high school kids' auction? Somebody will say, you pay me $1,000, you can get dinner at the Friars Club. Guess what? $20. Come see my show.
That's quite a bargain.
Also, May 14th. Oh, let's back it up. May 10th, I will be in Davis, California at the El Macero Country Club out there in California. May 14th, I'll be in Mill Valley, California at the Throckmorton Theater with Joe Klosick's going to be there. Who else? Keith Lowell Jensen. A couple of my friends who are both hilarious comedians. Also, May 25th, Calle Ocho, Miami, Florida. The Ocho Lounge, I found out it's called.
Oh, that's what I called it, actually. I just called it that. I called it Ha Ha's on Ocho.
I call it the Ocho Club.
The Ocho Club.
The Ocho Lounge.
That means eight, for those of you who don't speak
If anyone
Spanish.
Wants to open for me, I don't have an opener there, so I need a comic. Any Miami comedians?
I'll make some calls. I know some people down there.
Make some calls. June 1st, I'll be in Washington, D.C. with Andrea Jones-Roy at the Comedy Loft, I believe it's called, but it's the Beer Baron. It's the Beer Baron Bar or something like that. So come on out to all those. Get all those tickets at turnersparks.com. Kaplan, what do you? Your festival's over, right?
The Tribeca Film Festival is over. Yeah. So
How was it?
I'm plugging it. It was good. I went to see Reality Bites, a screening of that. It's 25th. They're big into these anniversary screenings. They got to find it. They got a whole team of people who are employed who just look at movies, what day they came out, what year. and then do the math each time a festival's coming up.
Bands are doing that now. Like 21st anniversary of the Outcome the Wolves album, Rancid.
I just heard that. I was on the radio and they had an advertisement that Bush and Live are touring together.
George Bush?
No, this band Bush. Gavin Rossdale, remember that crappy English band that I liked in high school? But and why would they be touring together? Because their debut albums were the same year. It's a 25 years anniversary for them.
It's a great marketing move.
So that's the. So yeah, I went to the Reality Bites. Speaking of which, Lisa Loeb performed right in front of me. She still looks great.
Wow.
The same glasses.
With Nine Stories?
By herself.
Oh, okay. But, I'm a bigger fan of the Nine Stories solo stuff.
Oh, no. I was telling this to some people who were in their 20s and they never heard of her.
You sang.
So, yeah, that's what she sang right in front of me. Like, right?
I'm going to hear what I want to.
So yeah, it was very exciting.
Boom.
And.
Boom, 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 boom. Does she have any other songs?
I don't know. Who needs other songs?
You really don't. You just play that for an hour.
Just play that one.
Do an extended version. Like the, what that band used to do.
Just like an instrumental?
Yes. Like Fish.
Just as long as she keeps the glasses, she can play what she wants.
Amazon, Kaplan.
Yeah.
The money is now rolling in. Once again, since we cleared the deal with Bezos.
Since we got Weber to.
So you guys get on board. I mean, it's a new trend now to give us money on Amazon. So what you have to do is go to lostinamericapod.com, click through the, what's the book called? Daisy Jones and the Six. Click through that. It'll take you back to Amazon. Really, do regular shopping. A percentage, up to 8% of what you buy comes to us for free.
We should put a Lisa Loeb CD on there or Reality Bites.
You don't spend any more money. We get money.
So buy whatever you need to buy at Amazon. If you need to buy seltzer, if you need to buy toilet paper, whatever you need to buy. Don't do it on the, you know, as Amazon, they have these things where you can reload monthly.
No.
And I don't fall for that trap. Now, they might offer you a discount, but don't do it.
Don't do it because then we don't
help
get.
Us. We're not going to.
Yeah, we don't get money.
Yeah, so please don't do that.
Don't do anything where we don't get money.
That's how you go through your day. Everybody go through your day.
That's a rule for life.
I mean, it's like first rule of life. Don't do anything where Kaplan and Turner don't make money.
Should we get to Lost in America?
Yeah, let's play that music.
Play the music. All right, we're back, Kaplan. We're both lost in America this week. We're both lost in America this past weekend in New York City. Yeah, what happened?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm trying, you know, I'm here trying to be a good parent.
Sure.
I'm trying to still be productive. We've talked about the Tribeca Film Festival. Every night I got events, there's parties. I'm rallying on the address.
Partying.
I did load management. I was not partying like I used to party.
Oh.
I was taking some nights off when I could here or there.
Responsible partying.
But I had a lot of events on my feet all day. I'm tired. Saturday was closing night. I had to work that night. I was up late Friday night. But I got up. I woke myself up at like 8:20 a.m., which is
Saturday
actually
morning.
Late for me. But I slept in a little bit, rallied. I walked the dog. I got the kids breakfast. I got the kids had soccer. That's what I'm getting.
Just a belly full of booze.
Night
before.
Not a belly full. If my Dr. Shaw's listening, not a belly full.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You're coming off the heart attack.
Yeah, but it's like a lot of mental energy, even if you're sober and not having a heart attack, to get kids dressed for soccer. You got these shin guards on. You have the shoes on. It's a lot of effort. Got to get them in the car. Got to go. They both had soccer, back-to-back games. Teddy plays, and then Ruby's in a little like a little league that's like not even games. They're just like the four-year-olds when they learn to play.
Yeah.
So we're going down the road. We're going to make it there in time, and all of a sudden, road's closed. So I'd make a left and down to go another way, and all of a sudden, another road's closed.
Yes.
And I'm sitting in traffic, seeing traffic. All of a sudden, it's 15 minutes go by, 20 minutes go by, 25. I keep driving. I'm sitting in all this traffic and people are doing that thing where they give up and they're just doing U-turns into oncoming traffic.
They're going home. Yeah.
But I'm like, we got to get there. If we get there by 10:30, we get there for the second half.
Oh my gosh.
And thank God I didn't have snack duty, by the way, because I was thinking, what if I have snack duty? I'd have to make it there because that's like your number one responsibility as a parent on a team.
How are they going
to
get Capri Sun?
They need their oranges and slices.
Yeah.
So finally at 10:30, I realized that we're so far away still. And I'm looking at the map and like every road is closed. So I see a cop. Roll down the window, and I ask Randy to ask the cop, you know, while we're sitting in traffic, because there's no sign saying what's the problem.
Going on?
And he says, there was a little race today. Well, was there the New York City Marathon? Was there the...
No.
No, there was just some random charity race.
But what was it?
I never found out the name of it. It was just like a little like 5K or something.
No, but it took over New York City.
No. So on Sunday, this is Saturday.
Oh, that's Saturday.
And then on Sunday, I had to come into the city to get Teddy's cake.
Yeah.
And it was raining, so I wanted to drive. And I'm driving, again, it gets trapped in a whole thing where everything's detoured. And I realize, oh, fuck, it's the Five Borough Bike Tour. Now, that's a big one.
The Five Borough Bike Tour.
The entire
tour.
City shut down because people want to ride their fucking bikes.
It's so ridiculous. Ride your bike. You have this is America. You have 3,000 miles of places to ride your bikes that don't include New York City.
Yeah. And
how about you stay out of New York City?
And all these people, like, I'm fine with the marathon. It's like an event.
I'm not.
All right, well,
get rid of them too. Get rid of anyone wanting to exercise in New York City. There is, you could go to any park. There's that Central Park. Do it in the middle of there. Wait. Do it in Kansas.
I'm saying, like, maybe as an extreme example, I'll accept them because it's like people come and it's a big thing. But like all these other little races, like how you say, like people who put like stickers on their cars because they ran a half marathon or they
exactly.
ran a 5K. It's like you're going to run 5K. I got to shut out. Everyone in New York City is inconvenienced. Or like you want to ride your bike around town. So we're all inconvenienced. It's not a race.
No.
It's a bike tour. So, like, there's no winner.
It's also, you can post it on Instagram, so you can go home to wherever you're from, and you can tell people you rode a bike through New York City. Guess who's... we don't care.
Yeah, no, because literally to get from... I'm in Queens to get to Brooklyn, there's a bridge, and that bridge is closed for the bike tour. It's completely closed.
Close
so
the whole
bikers
bridge.
Bikers can go over.
Yeah.
And there's, like, then you got
to
go...
The one artery in... And not to get too close to home, but these are arteries into and out of New York City. Oh. Now they're clogging your arteries.
Now you're triggering me.
You're giving New York City a heart attack.
And then you were... this affected you, right?
Yeah, church on Sunday morning, they do an announcement at the very beginning. They go, ladies and gentlemen, so our normal pastor, who's here every week, she's on vacation. So our backup pastor is going to be here.
Well, there's a backup guy.
Yeah, the backup lady,
it's like
by
a
the
substitute
way.
Teacher
2019.
Kind of
backup lady.
Lady.
Yeah, she...
Can you call a pastor a lady? You know, call her a pastorette or something?
Pastor, this is a rocket. A backup lady, pastor, I think is the correct term. She's stuck in traffic from this Five Boroughs bridge. What is it called?
Bike? Pray among yourselves?
Yeah, it's like, no, he goes, we don't know. We'll try to figure it out as we go along.
Right.
And so then every like regular ass people have to stand up and lead different aspects of it. And nobody knows what to do.
I mean, it's
they kind of remember because they've seen it before. It'd be like somebody, some listener of our podcast is all of a sudden has to host it. They go, I don't know.
That.
I think they start with the news.
You should have done that when I had the heart attack. Just guest host.
They start with the Amazon. I don't know. That's what everybody's doing.
You should have got up there and just done some like as your sermon. Cause someone's got to do the sermon, right? It's a big part. You
exactly. Yeah.
Just start doing some stand up or something.
I was gonna pull out some bits, some old bits. I didn't want to burn any new material, but I would do some old bits. But then, luckily, halfway through, she shows up.
Oh, okay,
and she's huffing and puffing.
Was she pissed off? But she's a progressive church. This she must be pro bikes.
No, she was pretty pissed.
Oh, she's pissed off.
Yeah, and
she
said she almost had a heart attack on 20 minutes earlier while waiting in bicycle traffic.
See, that's gonna turn people against the bike. The whole point is everyone.
I'm already against the bike.
Because like Randy, I was doing this rant at home, and Randy's like, "But exercise is good. I'm pro
anywhere else.
I'm like,
it's
I'm
good.
Not against people riding bikes." I think that's great, but
I'm against some riding in New York.
Like these people, I get it. You don't want to get hit by a car, so you have to ride in a bike lane. Don't ride in the middle of traffic. And
ride in a bike lane.
You want to have a special day where they close everything. But
no,
they should have a special day where they close all the bike. No bikers, so I could drive around like normal speed. Not have to hit anybody.
Yeah.
That.
I bet this is what I say. If you're allowed to ride in the car lane, there should be a special day where we can drive in the bike
That's
lane.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly.
Yes.
Special
okay, yes.
day.
Same
team. Because traffic used to has been.
But don't tell them.
Since they've added
so we
more
can hit them.
Bike lanes to the city in the last 10 years, I've seen this happen. There used to be routes that I would take that were great ways to drive because there was never traffic. And now it's like a one lane road because it's bike lane on one side. And they got to park the cars in the middle of the street to make lane for the bike lane, which is so confusing. I never know how to park. I never know if it's legal. It's really weird. A parallel park. You know what I mean? Have you seen these?
Sure.
Whether it's like literally in the middle of the street, just park cars.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is every city in America, by the way.
All
this whole country's gone to hell.
These fucking bikers.
We got to move to Japan with Ollie.
And we might do that.
Yeah.
That reminds me, I still have to teach Teddy to ride the bike. This hard attack's been my excuse if I'm putting it off, but. I got to get going soon. He's
7 years old.
He's seven now.
It's
time. I started to teach him when he's five. Gave up at six. Gave up. Seven, we got to make it happen.
You got to make it happen.
So
he's on the borderline of being made fun of by other kids.
Yeah, I did see home movies, and I was like seven in Training Wheels. My dad was a big failure, I guess, too. So.
Oh, seven? Oh,
I think seven's when I learned. So this is the year.
So this is the year.
Yeah.
Should we get
it's to our... You know what it is? You're like either special or you're like, oh, that's a single mom family or something.
Yeah.
Because then you're like, or his dad's a deadbeat or he's never home.
Oh,
so it's making me look like I'm never around.
Yes.
Dad's not around. Someone's got to teach that kid to ride a bike. So
don't want to be that.
No.
So should we get to our guest? Ollie Horn, come on
come
in.
Come on in, man.
Hey,
All right, we're back with our guest, Ollie Horn. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Yes. Pig in Japan is the name of the show.
Yeah.
What is it?
That's my debut stand-up comedy hour. So, you know how the British system works. Comics, they take a new show up to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival every single year. And you can't do that every year unless you have a debut show. So that's what I'm doing. I'm doing my debut. And I was given some advice by someone that knows a lot about marketing. They were like, the best show titles, if you can't think of like a really good one, is like 3 or 4 words max and includes a pun and has some keyword that's searchable. And Pig in Japan has all 3 of those criteria thoroughly met.
What part's searchable?
Japan.
Japan.
People, if someone's Japan. Interested about seeing a seeing a show about Japan.
Oh.
Or if someone's interested in pigs of Japan.
Yeah.
Like, if someone's really into
or
animals.
Or pork. I'm a big pork fan.
You're big. You're always looking at
I just
pork.
Look up pigs sometimes.
Yeah.
Where I can get a good feed.
That's like your porn.
A good meal. Like,
oh. Yeah. there's like a slightly hidden meaning that I don't talk about in the show. But like, basically the show was all about the fact that I lived in Japan for 4 years. And for 2 and a bit of those years I was working... like for the local media. So I was on TV doing radio, that kind of thing, doing some stand-up in Japanese. And like a lot of the shows about like how, you know, this, it's just so hard to fit in as a foreigner and kind of talking about stereotypes, blah, 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 blah. And the one time where I like had a racial slur said against me was I was coming back from a night out and speaking English to my Japanese friend. And this Japanese guy shouts at us and says, in Japanese, white pig go home. Shit will be
white
right?
pig.
And like that's like what we're called as like that's our N-word.
For white
the
pig?
Japanese
white
people,
pig.
White pig.
How do you say it in Japanese?
Shirobuta.
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 Are you my Shirobuta?
I'm gonna teach that to all my black friends to be a more it's more clever than calling us a cracker or something.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of interesting, right? That like we have our own, and like when there's like right wing rallies in Japan, which they're are quite a lot these days.
Really?
Yeah, they'll have those kind of signs.
And the right wings are against white people in Japan.
Yeah, weird.
Well, so fascinating.
Well, they're kind of like Puritans, right? Obviously, they mainly hate Koreans, which have like
sure
ethnic, like which are ethnically Japanese, but 4 generations ago might have
whoa,
been.
Whoa, don't have, tell them that.
Might have been to Korea on a boat trip, and they're like, wow, still not pure. And
then who's next, Chinese? Or
Yeah, they're not, the right wingers aren't big fans of the Chinese. I don't think they know enough about black people. I just think... I mean, blackface like is still a thing in Japan. Like there was an actor that kind of had to say sorry for blacking up in a commercial just last year.
They said sorry?
Yeah.
In China, they don't say, they even know it's bad.
Yeah. Oh, really?
They're still doing it, but there's no sorry. They're just like, oh, that's why? Why would I apologize? It's hilarious.
That is true.
Dox him immediately.
Yeah.
It can be both hilarious and inappropriate, can't it? But like I remember there was a big uproar because ANA, which is one of the national airlines of Japan, did a commercial where they like stereotyped a white guy, and this white guy like had blonde hair, blue eyes, and like a massive nose, mm-hmm. and like the whole point of the commercial was these guys had comically large noses, and it was really funny. But obviously, like white people in Japan got really cross because they haven't got
did.
Well, they haven't got anything to get cross about, have they? It's the
oh,
best
gosh.
Life.
I mean, are they Jewish people? Because like Jewish people get offensive by when people make fun of our nose because that's like a thing. But there's no stereotype on white noses in general. So
well, like, but it is.
No, it is. Like a big nose is a thing that Asian people think white people have.
Yeah. All white
like
people?
Me.
Oh, yeah. Not even. It's not a Jewish thing.
It's not. It's not oh, as. Wow. It's not as like.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's not. They don't look so deep into it to know right. the difference between Jew and Gentile. That's right. not a conversation.
Right. Well, I know. That
I don't think the ANA advert kind of went to those nuances.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a flight to Jerusalem. The.
It's just literally white people have big noses.
Right.
It's a stereotype.
Oh my God.
They say 2 things. They say white people have big noses and small faces. And I remember the first time I went to Japan. I got compliment, like I didn't know it was a compliment, but people were saying to me in English, oh, your face is so small.
And you do have a small face.
Oh, stop it. That was just me fishing for compliments. No, but like, apparently it's an actual thing, but a small face doesn't mean your head is small. And by the way, it is. I recently, for the first time, put on a motorcycle helmet and I fitted in a small one. So, you know.
Wow.
That's
upset.
That's news.
What do they say about people with small faces? I just want to know how far it goes.
I don't know.
Well, they're cute because the facial features have to be like the eyes are closer together. Like the eyes are close to the nose. The mouth is close. You know what I mean? It's like a, I mean,
it's all scrunchied up.
I've just done a scrunchied up kind of hand gesture.
I think I have a small face.
For the listening audience, Ollie, what are you, 6'3"? You're a big guy.
I'm a big guy. I wouldn't say I'm 6'3", but I stand like I am.
You're taller than you used to be.
Do you know what? It's really interesting.
I'm not kidding. When we met,
taller than we used to be.
Well, no, we met in 2015, and I swear you're taller now.
So I think Turner has a point. I think two things might have happened. One, I'm still a young man. It's possible that I could still be growing.
How old are you? 30?
I'm 27. I'm a baby.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. Right. Now,
so. But you don't grow between 23. You don't usually start growing.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe like 25, you stop. But this is what's interesting.
It's not true.
I don't know. Well, that's the thing.
You can't say
that's
I don't thing. Know, and that makes you right.
Maybe that's the way to win arguments. We just don't know, do we?
He's like a freak. He's growing later.
You're definitely taller.
Well, I've definitely got heavier. So how did that happen? If we don't keep growing,
yeah.
I definitely have continued to grow.
Sure.
Thanks. I think I win on a technicality.
Okay.
On an unhealthy technicality.
You're also bigger in general. Than
all right,
you
mate. Now,
a few years ago.
That's why Pig in Japan is an excellent title. Now, I worked really hard about 18 months ago now on my posture. Because I realized living in Japan, I'm way taller than people anyway. And even like tall people, I was still like crouching over. A lot of Japanese society is like loads are bowing. And also I just don't think I was carrying myself very well. So I watched these YouTube videos of these like chiropractors in the US.
Sure.
And followed them religiously. And it genuinely improved my posture. Wait. So much so that here's a really interesting thing that happened to me. I was in Seoul doing some shows. And I stayed in like a hostely thing, but like private rooms. So it was like, we weren't sharing rooms. There was like a communal area, which I went into. And this British guy who was like clearly just there to game the whole time. Like he definitely not left the hostel, but he came out of his room occasionally just to see what social events were going on. So he could like acknowledge they were there and then go back and game.
That's what is game?
Like game, you know, computer game. Like, he said that he brought his gaming rig with him on holiday.
To play video games?
I thought it was to game, like, girls.
That's what I thought you meant. Yeah, to, like, hit on girls.
Get your minds out of the gutter.
Everyone stays in the hostel.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest.
In Japan.
Like, this...
You fly to another country just to play video games?
Well, that's what he said. Like, but he says that, like... He said he did some job, which was, like, a warehouse job, and he said it pays him enough that he can spend 3 months a year just, like, going to places and game, and that's what he loves. And he preferred to game abroad than at his mum's house, because that's not cool.
Yeah, you're seeing the world.
Right.
Well, no. Okay, go ahead.
Right, so he said, are you going to join the, like, some nonsense, like, you know, kimchi making and that sort of thing? And he
went, oh, one of those cultural things.
Yeah, he said, are you going to join that? Oh, I said,
it's
no.
Like one of these douchey, like, dormant buildings in New York that have, like, theme nights.
Yeah,
same thing in a hostel now.
and I said, oh, I won't be joining that. He said, oh, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm actually... doing a stand-up comedy show just around the corner. He went, oh, you're a comedian. I went, yeah, yeah. And he went, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you look like a comedian, right? Which isn't him saying you look like a clown. It was clearly him commenting on my posture, because I just spent the previous 30 minutes doing one of these exercises and I was standing like I owned the place.
Wow.
Right? And I do think that show of confidence was what made him go, ah, yeah, that makes sense.
So you have better self-confidence.
You might have extended your spine or something if you really do posture.
You do look different, but I will say, yeah, having better self-confidence than a... traveling video game player.
You impressed
is not the highest bar.
You impressed a traveling video game player.
But it is fascinating, isn't
That's
it?
Like the biggest level of loser I could ever think of.
Yeah, it really amazing. Is.
Like, I think the guy who stays at home and plays at his mom's house is cooler in a way.
At least he's not wasting money on a flight to never leave a hostel.
Don't forget, this place was cheap to stay in as well. It was only like $20 a night.
Yeah.
Shout out.
Yeah, shout out.
So what? Okay, so you start out you went to Oxford, right?
Yeah.
And then you move to Japan as a lawyer, and then you immediately fall into television.
Yeah, so what happened was...
And stand-up comedy. Yeah. How does that all take place?
So I did. So I studied law at Oxford. I did an exchange year in Paris, where I studied the philosophy of law, because I was looking for an interesting way to get girls.
Sure. Right.
And that's when I first saw live stand-up comedy. Like, I'd seen kind of comedians in big theaters, and I'd seen stand-up comedy on TV, and that's when I first saw, like, an open mic.
In France?
Yeah, because there was, like, there was, you know, student-y, expat-y things to do. You know the score. And so I went to this little theater. It was called the Seoul Gymnase, above a proper theater, maybe 60 seats. At the time, it would have felt bigger, I suppose. And, like, I watched it, and I was like, oh, for the first time, oh, it's people like me that are doing stand-up, right? And so I was like, oh, I'm definitely going to write some stand-up for this. I want to do it next time because everyone seemed really popular and cool.
Yeah.
Little did I know.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, and at the time I was Skyping my friends back home, like telling them all stories about like dating French girls and doing a terrible job. And I was like, I'll definitely talk about that. And then I got a girlfriend, which is annoying because I was like, if I then do this open mic and she hears this, that's it.
Yeah, sure.
I thought you were like, oh, I'm going to blow up so big immediately that I can't have
Now you can't be tied down because two open mics in, you're going to be on TV signing autographs.
Well, exactly. That was my chief concern. No, but I was like, you know, either I don't tell her I'm doing this, but then we were like part of the same friendship group. She would have found out. She definitely would have wanted to go see. And, you know, I would have said stuff that she wouldn't have wanted to hear. So I was sat on this like 10 minutes of material. So then when I went back to Oxford, all my friends, or like the majority of them, had graduated because I like took that year out.
So you just didn't do it because you had this girl that you didn't want to see it.
Yeah.
You didn't want her to know your real self.
Yeah.
You could have just done it on a night when she was like, you knew she was like sick or
yeah. No. Maybe I didn't think it through, but I went back to Oxford and all my friends had graduated because they'd all, you know, done their finals while I was out in France with girls.
Got it.
Is it for the record? Yeah.
Yeah, for the record, you had sex in France. We got that part.
Put that in the record. It's in the pod. We want to edit it out.
We will not continue this podcast until everyone's caught up on that fact.
Are you keeping
all the listeners understand?
Yeah. So
continue.
We don't need to dwell on it too much, but
please let's dwell.
And so Oxford has this comedy society called the Oxford Review.
Hairy armpits, which
is like hairy armpits. What are you talking about?
The French girls.
Oh God,
you're dwelling.
I thought you would name. We're moving on. I thought you were like naming.
The name of the comedy review.
Yeah, yeah, right. Because that is a classic lame name for a sketch teeth. Group. What, hey, guys, what should we call ourselves? What are the hairy armpits? That's funny.
They're over it.
It's like the Cambridge Footlights, right? Only not as good.
I don't know what that means.
You've not heard of the Cambridge Footlights? Well, that shows what an egocentric view of the world I have. It's like where, so you know Monty Python?
Yeah.
That's the student society where that cast met.
Okay.
Right? And like loads of, you know, Stephen Fry, you know, lots of British national treasures have come from the Cambridge version. Oxford also has a version which had Mr. Bean in once.
Got it.
That's how that works. Normally you're supposed to join in your first year or your second year, really. I didn't because I wasn't really interested in doing comedy back then. But I was like, hey, can I, you know, turn up to a couple of meetings? Can I get on one of your shows? And so I did like a 10-minute spot. And obviously just because I was like a bit older and kind of had the not really giving a shit attitude because I wasn't keen like all these first years, I did well compared to the other people. And they were like, we haven't got a host for the next couple of shows. No one wants to host it because we're all doing sketches. Do you want to host it? So that was my first like proper stage time. Then graduated from Oxford.
What about the girl? Did she break up with her right now?
Oh, yeah. She'd already, but literally by the time I'd started my first semester back in Oxford, she Skyped me saying she was never going to see me.
She heard about your
she's
set.
Like, I wanted to go. No, she's like, I dreamed of dating a comic. You didn't do it. I moved on.
Word has come across the channel that you bombed at the Oxford Review.
The hairy armpits.
The hairy armpits are the worst group in the colonies. Our relationship's over.
So. Yeah. So that's basically what happened. I then, rather than do this, I was like, I'm going to do something else. So I applied for this like scholarship program to do postgraduate research in law in Japan. But before that started, I then went to Hong Kong to work as an intern as a judicial assistant. Well, ostensibly to do that, I was actually chasing a girl. And what happened was that literally the day I arrived in Hong Kong, she flew off and met her boyfriend in America.
Did she know you were chasing her?
Yeah, I'd made it really clear. Like
I'm getting out of the country.
There could have been no doubt, Turner.
She's like, words come through the colony. The hairy armpits.
So I sent her loads of messages on loads of platforms. She definitely knew.
Yeah.
And so I was in Hong Kong for like 3 months, and that's when I...
Is that when we met?
Well, it would have been... This would have been 2014, so maybe we would have met the year after. But that's where I met Nick Milnes.
He was only like 5'8" at the time.
Exactly. I was about nay high. So that's where I met Nick Milnes. I did an open mic at Takeout Comedy. I did the Brew House open mic on the Wednesday.
So when you get to Japan, you already have in mind that I'm going to do a comedy scene here.
Well, no. So what happened was I didn't really think that far ahead because I was really doing this to like as a way of meeting people. I was expecting to spend 3 months with the love of my life. Turns out I wasn't. I had no friends there. And so when I arrived to Fukuoka in the south of Japan, turned up, then like a month or two in, I was like, hey, I want to do some comedy. Googled, has there ever been any comedy in Kyushu, this whole island? And like 7 years ago, a German guy did an improv night.
Once.
Yeah. Like found it online.
It's kind of like how it was for me too.
And so then I found Raw Comedy in Osaka, which had started maybe 3 years prior, run by Ed Daggers. And he never responded to my emails originally. And then I also messaged the Tokyo Comedy Store, who at the time was run by Dave Gutteridge. Again, didn't respond to my emails. And so I just didn't.
That's the guy that didn't book Hannibal Buress, right?
Yeah, that's that guy. Yeah.
Hannibal Buress came to Japan and was there for like a couple nights on a vacation.
Yeah.
Stop me if I'm wrong with this. Was on their vacation with his family or his friends, and he looked up, like, Googled, like, comedy in Japan, and he saw there was an open mic night that night down the street. Uh-huh. So he emailed the guy, like, hey, can I come by and run some time tonight? And the guy was like, sorry, bro, we're full.
Did you know who
and
it
then
was?
He just didn't get up.
But Dave, what I understand was...
It's a legendary story.
Yeah, he was going to break the Cosby news there.
What I understand was Dave regrets this to this day.
Sure.
Dave replied to that email saying, we're egalitarian at the Tokyo Comedy Store. We don't care how famous you are. And he listed a couple of comics that were less famous than Hannibal Buress. You could be.
You could be Andy Curtin.
Yeah, exactly.
You turn could to sports. Be.
You could be Paul Johnson. What a piece of shit.
well done.
We still wouldn't let you in.
And so you could
be Joe Schaefer.
Because I didn't want to tread on any toes, because I was like, maybe someone like runs like a monthly night, and then they'd be really annoyed if I set one up. And so I realized there wasn't one. So then I went I sent an email to the editor of the local expat paper saying, have you ever heard of anything? And he went, no, but it's a great idea. I'll help you market it if you want. He gave me some suggestions of international bars I could go to. So I went to like 6 or 7 different bars. I didn't know much about running a night, but I kind of knew what worked in Hong Kong and in the UK. And found this bar in like the kind of club district of Fukuoka called CC Cafe, tiny little bar. And the two owners, one owner was a Japanese guy, one owner was a kind of Korean-American, both really up for it, both understood what stand-up comedy was, which like most people in Japan don't. And they were like, okay, we'll do it. So then they put a bit of money behind it. They literally built a stage. We bought lighting and, you know, we made it look as legit as we could. And it was only about 45 seats. But we crammed people in. We had sold out our first night. We did a monthly show, and basically because of the friends I made in Hong Kong, there were loads of people that were like keen to kind of come over and.
So you found the original comics.
Yeah, exactly. And they were keen to fly out until we can get better people.
Like me.
Yeah, you came out.
Was I in the better people?
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Nice.
Yeah. No Hannibal Buress.
It was also like less than $100 for me to fly there and fly back to Shanghai.
Yeah.
For some reason, that's a crazy flight. So what about the TV stuff? Because you started stand-up comedy, then you're on TV. What are some crazy... Like, when I think of Japanese television...
I think of crazy.
It's insane, right? It's people trying to run up a mountain and then a boulder crushing them.
Yeah.
It's like people like literally dying in the middle of a game show.
Yeah.
What did you do?
Well, I wish I had stories like that.
A lot of seizures, right?
Yeah. A lot of seizures. Because the lights.
I think the only reason we see these kind of shows is because they are kind of exceptional. The vast majority of Japanese TV is absolute guff. It's really boring, formulaic, self-congratulatory guff.
About what?
Just about Japan. Japanese TV is obsessively talking about Japan. And what's really fun is anytime like anything else in the world is going on, they have to find a Japanese lens through which to view it.
Sure.
And so that's kind of what the times when I was on TV, it was always like speaking about what happens abroad. I was never a representative of the UK or there.
You were the world?
I was the rest of the world. I was othered.
So what'd you say about us? Were you a real sellout? Were you like, yes, the world is definitely
100%.
Everyone bows to Japan.
So
is it like a news program?
Japan's the best. Where you'd be like-
So I did a weekly radio report, which was live, and that I would like go to like some festival or some, you know, outdoor food. I don't know, something Japanese, and then kind of talk about it and say if there's an equivalent in the rest of the world.
The rest of the world.
And it was really funny. Like, they were making me, like, you know, I went to like a sparkling wine festival. They were like, can you read us all the names of the Italian wines authentically? And I was like, yeah, I doubt we have a single Italian listener that's going to come
bluff.
And even, yeah, and even if they do listen, they're not going to email in. So I tell a story in the show.
Wait, was this question, was this radio show in English or in Japanese?
In Japanese, yeah, yeah. That's what I kind of owe me speaking relatively good Japanese. Like, my Japanese is not that good, but I sound really persuasive in Japanese. And that's partly because one of the people who produced the segment was part of the management that I was with. And basically she would like write the scripts for me, and every time before we'd start, she'd go through the whole script, help with any words I didn't know. And, you know, that really, really helped, right? I tell one story in the show where I did sell out a bit, where I just said that in the UK that we don't have kites.
They invented them in Japan?
Because you could tell that's what they wanted?
Yeah, because they were like,
you don't have this in your country, right?
No, I was like, no, the first time I ever saw a kite was here.
I get that question all the time when I'm in China.
I mean, they have kites in the most, like, third world countries.
Did they invent the kite, Japanese?
No,
didn't Benjamin Franklin?
You did.
Yeah, I thought Benjamin Franklin.
The kite doesn't need inventing, does it?
It sure does.
I don't know.
Don't just appear out of the
I always thin thought
air.
Kites were like a military thing.
Why?
You should really look this up, but yeah.
Wait, so what?
No one knows.
No one knows. So what happens with the kite story?
Well, that is the beginning and the end of the story.
I just
declared that there are no kites.
When I was in China 2 weeks ago, I was at a dinner and they served shrimp. And someone at the table said to me, shrimp? They don't have shrimp in America, do they?
Amazing.
And I said, yeah, I think they have shrimp everywhere in the world.
Yeah, anywhere where there's a sea, maybe.
But clearly they wanted me to say no. They might be like, no. This is only in China.
You can never work for Chinese TV.
You can get shrimp.
But this is something that I do think unites the world. That, like, people are so persuaded of the lens through which they see the world that whatever they see is the standard, right? Then anything else in the world is like different to that standard, right? The way they see the world is the standard by which the world should be measured. And so we're so guilty of kind of betraying that bias by asking people about what's different in their country rather than what's the same. Like, people are so persuaded that they're not like other people, but loads of people are like them.
Yes. Wait, what?
I don't think people are like me, personally. But no, I get what you're saying. Everyone, whenever we're around the world...
Turner's still trying to process what I just said.
I'm waiting for Cap to explain
people
it.
People see the world through, you know, how they live. They just think that's the life.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You know, that's why when you came back to America, you were so lost, because you saw the world through the Chinese lens.
Yes, very true.
He was so lost. It's a shaky premise.
I mean, is it not true? Have you hung out with me?
Yeah, no, it is. I completely agree. And it's just so difficult also just to explain exactly what that life is like to people that haven't lived it.
It's impossible. You almost don't want to.
It's like, it doesn't, you know, you just
can't. No one really cares.
You can't imagine, say, living in the UK or living here and only going to one of six bars, because they're the only bars which, like, you're not going to have hassle and there's going to be people that you know there. Right?
Yeah, but that actually is more fun. I think you can in America because it's like going to college in college towns.
That's
what bars are like. There's like six bars where the college kids go
to. That's interesting.
And then there's because they're all cheap and like they let in underage kids.
And kids who go abroad, then they fall into that where they only go to like six bars in like London or somewhere.
Yeah, so
those are like the places where they
I always try to tell people that it's like a college life, but extended for as long as you want it.
Right.
And if you go until you're like you're about the age pretty good. I don't know when you're thinking of leaving.
Oh, I've left.
Oh, you're out.
Well, I have to, because otherwise I will stay forever.
Yeah.
Well, it's so good.
You don't want to be the 40-year-old and then who's just like just girl, life's in the gutter.
I know. I know. Yeah, well, basically that was my concern. I was living in this great apartment. It was like $450 a month for a 2-bedroom apartment in the center of town.
Yeah.
The international airport has like direct flights to Europe, direct flights to San Francisco. It's like a good international airport. I was doing loads of really interesting projects, but I was like, I just can't do this forever.
So this is you, you're gone now.
I think so. Well, certainly the conclusion of the show is that I've left. So that would be annoying if I haven't, because then I've got to rewrite that.
Well, that's like, what's her name? The Australian lady who did the stand-up thing about how she was quitting comedy.
Oh, that's what
and then she didn't quit.
Oh, yeah. This was...
Hannah Gatsby.
Hannah Gatsby, yeah. That's her name. So what are you...
He's
where are you moving
Hannah
to?
Hannah Gatsby of Japan.
You're the Hannah Gatsby. If you don't move...
Should I put that on my poster?
You're really pulling a Hannah Gatsby.
So I don't know. That's... Yeah. So I'm... As of next week, I'm valiantly... allowing my mum to move back in with me in her house.
In her house. Yeah. Where are you so you're moving again? In with your mom.
100%.
What town?
I was going to say, there's no room in New York City for you.
Cherish them.
I see he's got his luggage here, so I was like, he's just going to go. Or...
Hey, you
got
to go somewhere.
So I mean, so basically, the way that I think about it is, there are enough festivals in the world which you can like spend a month at a time, and it's better if you spend long times at these festivals, like Edinburgh, like Adelaide, like Perth. And so that's kind of occupied the last 6 to 8 months. I'm thinking about moving back to the UK, but I need to spend a bit of time there to know whether I want to. The next like big thing in my kind of comedy diary is the Fringe in August. And so that's kind of
in Edinburgh.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Maybe we'll see. Maybe I'll get incredibly bored. Because I do think one thing that I quite liked about living in Japan is there's always something to do, which is going to occupy like loads of your brain power for as long as you need it to. So like if you want to make a particular kind of bank transfer in a Japanese ATM, what happens is like the English menu only goes so far. So like, they'll translate it into English up to like reset your PIN and withdraw money. But the moment it's like you've got to do anything like an adult would do, it's all in Japanese. And that's when it's like, well, I literally could be an hour now. Just, you know, looking up characters and sending money to the wrong person and calling them asking for it back.
There's also in the expat lifestyle, there's the thing where no one really has families. No one's mom is having a birthday this weekend. And so they have to go home and they can't go out.
Yeah, well,
like no one's families are around, so everybody's basically single. Even if they're married or in a relationship, the other the person they're with doesn't have their extended family there either.
Yeah,
so everybody's hanging out all the time.
Yeah,
whenever you move back, people don't hang out as much because everyone has obligations all over the place.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, and I think, and don't forget the kind of people that are predisposed to moving abroad do tend to be the people that are up for new experiences.
Yeah.
You know, they do tend to be somewhat interesting. And so, they are, on average, probably more interesting people than you'd meet.
Or delaying adulthood.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
The people who won't go abroad are the people who like won't go to a good party because like Game of Thrones is on or something. They're just like...
They're not those people.
They're like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So
exactly.
When you come back, you enter a world where you don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
Especially as you get older.
Although, so. I did try and make this point on the radio once in Japan that a lot of the Americans that Japanese people meet are there because like they're absolutely obsessed with manga or anime or whatever part of Japanese culture it is.
Yeah.
And then they move to Japan.
We call those people creeps.
Right. Well, there's a Japanese word for it, otaku.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but then, which then they've... That's
different than white pig.
No, otaku. otaku in Japanese, like if you use the word to a Japanese person, otaku means like...
Otaku.
It's worse than a nerd. It's right. Like it's someone that's like really kind of reclusive.
Joe Schaefer.
Well, nerds are cool now, but not about otakus.
Not otakus.
You wouldn't want to be called an otaku, but like these Americans of like, well, not just Americans, Europeans too. Australians, New Zealand, white people.
So I know the people.
They've like reclaimed this word. So like they like on their Twitter profile, they'll say, you know, otaku.
Oh, they're proud of
it. It's like the incels or whatever, right? The guys who can't get laid and like that's their identity now. So they don't get laid. Well,
the Japanese.
Have you heard of these people?
No.
Yeah, they're on the internet, clearly.
But
it's a subset of society of men who can't get laid.
Right, well, that's a lot of men, but then you don't.
No, they group together and then like they're proud of it.
They just say like, "Fuck it, we're doing this intentionally."
Yeah.
What's really good is on the records of this podcast, we know that I couldn't possibly form part of that group of people.
No, exactly.
All established.
We all heard.
It was all the way back in 2013.
No one in the armpits. In Paris, France.
Thank you.
So what do they think of you? What do Japanese people think of a big, bumbling British guy walking down?
Calm down. Well, so that's kind of my point, that I didn't come to Japan with like a desperate desire to... Like, I'd literally never read a manga novel in my life. I'd not watched
anime.
I've never
heard of that. Mango.
Manga.
I don't know.
You know what manga is?
No.
Like comic books.
Maga?
Manga. Comic books.
Oh, comic books. I mean, I'm not into
I know
comic
what
books
comic books are. I don't know what manga is.
It's like Japanese comic books.
It's like this.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know anime.
So, and the people that go, these people that like, their whole cultural identity is based on loving this thing. They go to conventions.
I'm not even kidding. Joe Schaefer is one of these people.
They get dressed up, cosplay.
Yeah. He moved to Japan first and then came to China.
Right.
Shout out, Joe. You're a kakaku or whatever.
He gets late though. No, so
he does. He does. Yeah, yeah.
Clear that up.
And these people...
He's been to France.
He's been to France.
That's the code for getting laid. Joe Schaefer's been to France once or twice.
Yeah.
What's the twice?
Being in a taco.
Paul Schaefer. I mean, Paul Johnson, I'm not sure.
Not so much.
Paul Johnson's not been to France.
So these people.
In fact, Paul Johnson hadn't been to France until he'd left Germany.
Sure, you're right. When he was a, if you go back and listen, we had a podcast with him about being Mormon in Germany.
Well, there we go.
So back to the ikakus.
So basically, I tried to explain to Japanese people that the vast majority of foreigners that you're meeting in Japan are not representative of like foreigners in the rest of the world.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Right? Losers. Like these are people that like Japanese have a crazy overestimation of quite how popular their popular culture is, because they're meeting like Westerners that are obsessed by it.
Sure.
Right.
And so
I could see that. Yeah.
And so like, you know, I think back to like someone like my mum.
So your whole job is like, calm down, Japanese.
Yeah.
You're not as cool as you think.
Get
you
over
are.
Yourselves.
I mean, you did invent the kite, but you're not that cool.
Other than the kite.
Besides that. By the way, great job on that.
I'm gonna bring one back. And so like, because I didn't have that kind of burning desire, Japanese people, like, they're so used to kind of asking, why did you learn Japanese? And for me, it was like, well, I probably could have gone to any country that would have offered as generous a scholarship and, you know, which language I could have learned. I probably would have been as happy, because all I was interested in was not being in the UK.
Yeah.
Right. Not necessarily being in Japan. But yeah.
So you kind of cool guy'd him. You were like the cool guy at the bar who's not interested in the hot chick, and then he gets her.
Yeah.
Yeah. but they weren't, I don't know, I guess when I was younger and skinnier, I was like more like,
I remember those days,
more like the shorter considerably shorter.
Shorter, yeah, yeah.
I wonder, would I want to be taller and heavier? Like, it's like an interesting trade-off.
You walk into a room now with this, with the extra, I don't want to say how many kilos, but also height.
Let me put it this way,
a sense of authority when you walk into a room.
The extra kilos is enough to be a luggage allowance.
It's 50 pounds.
I don't know what that is.
What's the luggage? What do you mean a luggage allowance?
To fly? To get on a
plane? Yeah.
For a bag, you mean?
A bag allowance, 50 pounds.
They don't have one for
people. Is that like 20 kilos?
Turner wants them to have one for
something like that.
Yeah.
I've told him my whole bit. Yeah. I think that it should be a combined weight.
Yeah.
I think that to go onto the airplane, it should be your weight, your personal weight plus your bag added up weight. So if you weigh less, you should get more luggage allowance.
Yeah. So at the check-in desk,
and if you're
you both
a big guy,
go together.
If you weigh over 300 pounds, if the combined weight's 250, get on a treadmill. They have a treadmill in the bag. You can run it off.
I would say rather than the treadmill, they should just install some like port-a-loos. Go on, try it.
Yeah, and give you some. You can crap it out.
Yeah.
So the Japanese people, so like, everyone's
back
a loser.
To the Ikaku.
What about, yeah? Is there a lot of people also there for like video games and stuff? Is that like a
thing?
Of like
course.
Yeah, of course.
Like, don't forget, there are enough normal people in.
Because my kid wants to take a pilgrimage there because of like Sonic the Hedgehog and all that.
Yeah. So I need to have a good time.
He'll be an Ikaku.
I got to change how I'm raising him. This is a whole
I got a question about.
Don't get me wrong, because potentially there are going to be friends that I've been in Japan that are listening to this going, I think we might have all been tarred with the same brush.
Oh, that we do that every week. We don't care.
Big tars.
Okay.
Here's what you got to do.
What color's the tar?
Unfriend them all on social media and you're fine.
Yeah, okay. There are enough.
It's worth it,
people.
Trust me. For these amount of listeners, your career is going to be in a new place.
Oh, really?
Big pop.
After this. Big
should I put social media on lockdown until.
Yes. I have a question about Japan. Why are they, compared to the rest of Asia, Japan is very organized, clean. Asia, I guess outside of South Korea, the rest of Asia I've been to, I've not been to North Korea. The rest of the place I've been...
It's very organized there.
Yeah, it's very organized. Very clean. The rest of it's very, like, just, including China in this, chaos. There's scooters going everywhere, people flying all over the place. But it's fun, it's exciting, but it's also dirty and smells bad. But Japan is the one place that everything's clean, everyone waits to cross the street. What happens?
Smells nice there?
So I'm probably not the best person to ask about this. Probably a Japanese person would be able to.
We don't know any of them.
Yeah.
You're our sir.
You're as close as we get.
You speak for them.
How can white people find out about other people? Get another white person to talk about it on mic. My suspicion is why is Japan like markedly different culturally to the rest of Asia? It's partly, I think, because like they were just isolationists. So there wasn't that same amount of cross-pollination, right? So like for 200 years, Japan was like, not even wanting to trade with Asia. Maybe they'd like accept something from the Dutch. And I think it's also just a byproduct of their wealth, right? Just think about how, you know, the Japanese economy, particularly during the 80s, was just on a different scale to anything any other Asian country could have imagined.
They were supposed to crush us. They were supposed to be the ones, not China.
And so it probably is just a byproduct of the fact that they've got all this wealth. They spent it on nice infrastructure. When you've got nice infrastructure, you don't really want to ruin it.
They have nice cars. You gotta have nice roads.
I think another thing that's quite interesting about Japan is they do have this sense of community that doesn't exist in the West. And I think that's best exemplified with in the West we say our first names first, right?
Yeah. And well, we say our given name first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas in Japan, you'd say your surname first. Like, you first belong to your family, and then your first name is but a subset.
Well, that's
of
what I do, but yeah.
Likewise, if you're presenting yourself, like, say, from your company, like, say, I'm Ollie Horn, who works for Toyota. In English, you say, oh, I'm Ollie, I work for Toyota. Whereas in Japanese, you say, I'm Toyota Horn Ollie.
Really?
Yeah, and so, like...
proud of your company.
That's why they kill themselves when they get fired.
Possibly. Yeah. We don't know. Maybe we should just say we don't know.
We don't know.
I think Bob. That's for one, sure. Maybe that's just one pithy example.
I'm Bob. Campbell's Bob.
That's the move, though. You
Bob.
Know. It is cool. If you have a good job, you do
Bob,
it.
You're Bob, Campbell, and Michael.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Perfect. I think it's a pithy example, but it
I'm Comedy Sparks Turner.
Comedy? You sound like you're a children's entertainer.
I make a living.
Yeah, you have pride, though, in your company.
What if you don't work for a company like me?
Actually, I did just go to what do freelancers do? I guess they just present as themselves.
I'm a freelancer.
So what? All right. So you're going to be all around the world. So you don't know what you're doing. We've caught you right in the middle of a big life crisis here.
Yeah, he's just
That's one way.
Where's all your
it?
Stuff? Is it still?
Most of my stuff is just in two bags. So basically,
like they know you're not coming back to Japan. Like you don't have like.
Oh, so what? Yeah. So what actually happened in Japan?
What about the club and everything?
No one listens to this, do they?
what? Now we're in the good part of the podcast.
So what actually happened was I'd finished the Edinburgh Fringe, and my plan was to stay in Japan for longer, right? To go back and carry on living my best life. But I was always kind of thinking, I want to do something else. I was working on a language learning platform that had kind of just kind of come to an end. And I was talking with the guy that I set that up with, Philip. We were kind of looking to launch a new project anyway. And I was like, maybe that can be the reason I move somewhere else. And basically, I went back to Japan to find out that the guy that I was subletting my apartment with, so like we had an Airbnb that comics would stay in. And then while I was out of town, because I was like on tour for maybe 5-6 months of the year, I'd Airbnb my apartment. The guy that I was doing it with went through his own shit, and I just don't know why. Apparently now he lives on an island and no one's heard of him.
Yeah, get this guy in the pod.
Shutter Island.
But we had like a joint bank account that we were using to like keep the Airbnb running.
You're shrimping out with your roommate?
There was not any money there.
Oh, no.
And I was getting like angry emails from the landlord saying you haven't paid your rent for the last 2 months.
No.
So basically that literally cleaned me out. So I made a little bit of money from Edinburgh, which is unusual. Most of the time comics go to Edinburgh and just lose loads of money in one big vanity project. Alex Keeley, the comic in the UK,
lost a lot of money.
Well, everyone does, but maybe he didn't actually. He's doing a free fringe show. But he said at the end
free.
He said at the end of his show a line which really stuck to me. He went, one of my dreams as a comic is to come up to this festival and not be fined for doing what I love. It's really funny. So anyway, so I just kind of made that decision there and then. I was like, I just can't be bothered with this anymore. So we closed down the two Airbnb. Also, Airbnb had just become illegal in Japan, so it was going to be tricky anyway.
What kind of illegal?
What?
What was illegal?
Airbnb, doing Airbnb. Like, oh, Airbnb. It was like a huge registration system and a load of bureaucracy.
Was this guy another expat?
No, Japanese guy. And so, and we were buddies.
Japanese guy.
And who knows? But basically, he needed the money more than he needed that friendship. And so...
Did you contact him? He just doesn't return your calls or anything?
I think I met him.
Because
I've stayed in that Airbnb, and you were out teaching or working for the day, and so he came and let me in. It has to be the same guy.
Yeah. Anyway, let's...
Your wallet was gone later.
What's his name? Let's dox him.
Let's not do that.
Let's...
And so on that basis, I just got rid of all my stuff. Literally just my friend John Bear.
Shout out.
John Bear?
Yeah, you might have met him, actually. He did comedy.
John Bear.
John Bear is a good name.
It's a great
real name.
It's his stage name, but it comes from his Icelandic name, which also apparently means bear. So that's great. Like the thing is, he started doing comedy, and his English is so good, like better than anyone's, really. He was like saying, I'm Icelandic. And he just obviously wasn't Icelandic because his English was too good to be
fine. Yeah.
And so I was like, you got to stop saying that. Unless...
Or you got to ramp up the accent.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. You got to do what's the accent?
Ramp it up.
Oh, ramp
like,
it up.
Make it more obvious.
Yeah, okay. And so we just hired a van, which was great fun. Never hired a van in my life before. That's adult. I've never done that in the
UK.
Wait,
what story are we on to now?
Well, just then like I just got rid of all my stuff.
Oh, I see.
Put it in a van and threw it down the river.
Then... coincidentally had an opportunity to go to San Francisco and get a visa to go there to work on this project, which I'm launching to do with home cooked food. I'm a massive foodie.
Oh yeah.
Well, I'm a massive anything. Got in there before you did. And the law in California is changing to allow people to sell home cooked food legally, which I think is great.
Yeah.
Wait, right? Whole cooked food.
Home cooked food.
Home cooked.
Oh, home cooked food. We mean you couldn't sell. Oh, like because you're not like a restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like you can't get, but they're changing the law. So like, there's a massive black market for this food anyway, right? Like, if you want authentic Mexican food, you just find the right Facebook group.
Wait, what?
Really? You just go into someone's house?
Yeah, you just pick it up.
Show up at a Mexican family's house, and
you're like, I demand.
Here's some money.
Excuse me, Ollie says.
Ollie says I can have two chili relenos.
Yes. Who's Ollie? Listen to the pod. It provides you with a good amount of context. And so that's, then I was in San Francisco for 3 months, which was great. I got to
just making Mexican food.
A good law in San Francisco. I can't believe it. I like it. I like this a lot.
This, yeah,
is great, man.
Very progressive.
So you're out of Japan. Don't know what's next.
No, I'd like, I do quite like being in the States. Like, I've never been to New York before. Right?
Stay, stay. Yeah. There's not enough room for you on the island, but you can live out in Brooklyn.
Okay. Well,
all right. Well, we got to get to the news. Should we do this?
Yeah,
let's stick around for the news.
He's an authority on a lot of things.
We got a lot of news items to get to.
Kite stories.
Okay,
there's been a lot of news today.
Okay, I'll stick around for the news.
All right, stick around for the news. Before we get to the news, Ollie, where can people find you?
Well, geographically, who the hell knows? I don't even know myself. Instagram, Ollie Horn Picks. Some stellar content on there.
P-I-X?
P-I-C-S. Well, that's Ollie Horn.
P-I-C-S, like a picture.
Yeah, it should come up. If anyone knows anyone that's going to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year, I have 1,500 tickets to sell.
Wow.
And I haven't sold them all yet. So that would be amazing. You can find details for that show at edfringe.com. Search for Ollie Horn, Pig in Japan. Tickets are on sale, but not selling.
I was looking at you did the Adelaide Fringe?
Yeah, that's great.
Where's Adelaide? South Africa? Australia? How was it? The reviews were great.
We got there. So Adelaide was really great. I stayed with family, or rather, I say family, like family through marriage, but not even marriage. So my mum's boyfriend's younger brother has a house there, because that's where he lives.
Boyfriend, younger brother.
That counts.
And she was like, you know, you definitely got to stay. Turns out they were great. How awful would that have been if they weren't?
Yeah.
But it was just a great festival. The shows went well, got progressively better. Loads of other spots you can do, which all pay.
The reviews were good.
I got good reviews, and it was better than the Perth Festival. Did I tell you what happened in Perth?
No.
So the way that these festivals work is you have to... this isn't news. Oh, it is
we'll
news.
Get to the news. We'll get to the news.
It's my news.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Personal news.
Ollie's news.
Local news.
Local news from 2 months ago for a festival that's long gone. So the way that these festivals work is you kind of work via like a venue manager who like produces that venue.
Yeah.
And they normally manage, you know, between half a dozen and, you know, 20 venues. And I turned up the day before my first show in Perth, where I booked into a 35-seater venue, which was going to be great. But my show requires a screen. And the guy there was like, oh, I'm really sorry, the screen's not working. Can you do your show without a screen? And I was like, I don't think I can. And so I was like, okay, well, let's see what we can do. We either fix the screen, which they couldn't, or we'll move you to a different venue. So they moved me to a different venue, focusing mainly on the screen.
Yeah.
So they moved me to a venue which has the largest screen in Western Australia.
Ooh.
Western Australia.
Yeah.
Western
Australia. How big is that?
Which was a 300-seater venue.
300 seats?
And I'd sold for that first show 13 tickets.
Wow.
And so the audience filed in just thinking, what on earth have we let ourselves in for? Obviously, it's going to be bad.
And are they just spread out over 300 seats?
No, because I removed all the seats. So I just, there was the 10 lonely seats.
So you're a sellout.
It was standing room only. But
it's like 10 seats in the middle of a basketball gym.
Yeah, basically, and it's just
like when WNBA games play at Madison Square Garden.
It was the back room of like a massive, like sports bar, nightclub, you know, venue complex.
Yeah. They'll
play like American soccer in like a big American football stadium.
Yeah,
and there's like
they have to put curtains over the top and everything. So all the seats.
But it was just so degrading to have to start the show by going, look, this isn't me having been ambitious and that ambition having now failed.
I needed a screen.
I needed a screen.
First news story of the week comes to us from Time Magazine, Kaplan.
All right. That's where I get all my news besides here.
A clean Chinese restaurant in New York is the latest flashpoint in a debate over cultural appropriation.
Oh, boy.
On Monday, chef and health coach Ariel Haspel.
Can you be a chef and a health coach?
I don't think so. Not successful at either one.
Yeah.
Chef and health coach Ariel Haspel opened Lucky Lee's in New York City, a restaurant that she has dubbed as clean Chinese food. Clean Chinese restaurant that she said would combine her healthy eating focus with her love of Chinese American food. Mm. Her opening quickly was dampened by online backlash, people calling it cultural appropriation. Here's what I have to say. Can I start?
Yeah, this is your area of expertise.
Let's just skip the cultural appropriation thing and just say this is going to be a garbage, terrible restaurant. This is going to be bad food.
Why?
Healthy Chinese food? Get the fuck out of here.
Healthy Chinese food?
Chinese American food in general, get out of here. I want Chinese food. I want slippery floors, as I've said before. I want people smoking in the restaurant. I want something about the cigarette, the ash getting into the food makes it taste better. I don't know what it is.
They still smoke in restaurants? That's...
In China.
Well, yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Do they do it in Japan?
I've seen smoking in restaurants with... I've been at dinners where there are... the dinner is for a newborn baby. The baby is sitting at the table and everyone's smoking cigarettes and just coughing.
Blowing it into his face.
Just coughing into the baby's mouth.
Give him cancer from the get-go.
I do remember being at a restaurant in Hong Kong where the guy that was making the food was smoking as he was like...
cooking. That's every restaurant.
But it did occur to me, how on earth is he tasting what he's eating? He's not, is he? Because he knows it's going to be delicious.
Yes!
Because everything he's put in has to be delicious. What are you going to do? Add some meat? Great. Oil? Great. MSG? Yeah. Are you going to taste it? What's the point?
Put a couple ducks up in the window so people know it's good. Away you go. I think the problem with this is that this lady doesn't know what she's doing. You can't be, as you said, a chef and a health coach. You're not going to make good Chinese food.
I think this place should be allowed, but it's like, you know how like you have like a therapy dog if you prove that you're recording?
Yeah.
You know, you get a therapy dog if you prove you have a reason for it and get on a plane.
Sure.
Like, I feel like, say I had like a heart attack. I don't know if you're... So like I
regular listener of the pod.
I can't eat Chinese food really because it's really low, the sodium issue and all that stuff.
Yes.
So someone like me should be able to be like, well... I'm allowed to go in there without being hated on. No.
Wait, why?
Because it's like I'm not allowed to eat Chinese food at all right now. So if I go in here, this is like a halfway
house.
I think
it depends how you're dressed.
I think you just shouldn't eat Chinese food anymore.
I shouldn't eat Chinese food ever again.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem fair.
I think if you go into this restaurant, you should dress up in like Chinese cultural garb.
You should have a gong.
I'll wear a gong.
They should gong it. This white lady should gong it every time you walk in. She should have a rice hat on.
Yeah,
Should go full on.
Full on.
I haven't heard of cultural appropriation being in the news in years. Like I honestly thought that was over.
Week.
I thought that fad was over. That we cared about that. That we fake cared about that.
Oh no, they care about everything. There was a girl with the prom
mansplaining, manspreading. I honestly thought that was all out the window when we got like real problems.
I think the thing about appropriation is this idea that like something which is owned by a minority community is kind of taken by a majority community, and then it's no longer in their control. Right. Like they no longer control the narrative, right? That's why racial minority, that's why.
So you think they're going to be worried that
No, I'm saying they won't be worried. Chinese people are like, do what you want.
Yeah, dude, are Chinese people
this won't touch
most
us.
Chinese restaurants in America that like there aren't, especially ones in like Manhattan, like there's like these areas like Chinatown with like authentic. Most of them aren't authentic, as you've found out. Already.
Oh, they're mostly Japanese people working, or Chinese people working at sushi restaurants.
So what's the difference between that and this? I mean, this is not authentic.
Here's what the difference is.
She's white.
When it's a Chinese person cooking at a sushi restaurant, white people don't know that they're not Chinese or Japanese.
Right.
That's the only difference, because white people are the ones who complain about cultural appropriation.
If you go to
they're not complaining about that because they don't know, because they're too ignorant to know that is also cultural appropriation.
I went to a Thai fusion restaurant in San Francisco and noticed all the servers were Japanese.
Yeah.
And
did you throw a fit? Did you write a blog?
No, I asked about it and they were like, well, there's just loads of Japanese restaurants here.
Right,
because
Thai got very popular.
Exactly.
And then Japanese was the popular in like the 90s.
Yeah, so what are you going to do?
The difference is, right, because they're from that part of the world, generally, Americans don't really want to complain.
No, it's because they don't know the difference.
Right.
But that's imagine, why Americans
imagine,
don't complain.
Imagine if it was like a load of Nigerians that set up a Nepalese restaurant.
Right. Well, there'd be no complaint.
That's why you could get away
really?
With it.
Not in America.
No, because
you have to be white to complain.
Right.
Yeah, but it's like an interesting thing as you're saying, because like if you go to an Italian place, it feels like authentic. You want like but it's like hard. So now it's like if like a Greek guy or a Turkish guy was trying to pull off being Italian,
yeah, you can't tell the difference.
It's like that's the thing. You need to be that you can't tell the difference thing.
I just imagine
a Nigerian guy.
I just imagine myself being in China. Because we did have the local like expat restaurant in quotation marks where it was just a Chinese guy opened a food that was like Western food.
Western Chinese food.
No. Like American, like it would have burgers and pizza and sandwiches. And I just imagine myself going in there and just throwing a fit that he's appropriating my culture.
What is going on here?
I did the opposite. I ate there like every day because it was the only thing that was like close enough to my style of food.
What about in Japan? Is it like what's the Western food?
Well, what's really interesting is Japanese people are by nature, I think, very inquisitive, and they're very good at refining things. Right, like I think it's typical of Japanese history. They don't invent stuff as much as they create it.
Other than the kite, but yeah.
Other than the kite. they take an existing idea and they refine it. And so that's why I think you'll find some of the best pizza, like even Italians acknowledge, some of the best pizza in the world is found in expensive pizzerias in Tokyo.
Really?
With like a Japanese guy that's like spent 12 years in Naples learning the craft, bringing it back, importing ingredients, and like really caring.
Like Jiro dreams of pizza?
Yeah, exactly.
I watched the original Iron Chef. They take it seriously. Yeah.
He spent his whole life crafting the perfect slice.
Exactly.
And he fires his kids every 6 months.
And do you know what?
Having, they don't make it right.
Having eaten some of the best pizza in Rome, just a month after I had a pizza in this restaurant in Nakameguro in the center of Tokyo, absolutely agree that like this
really
guy knocked it out of the park.
You need to go to like Lombardi's while you're in New York, or one of the places that's like
a dollar a slice.
No, one of the really good places that people think the best, and take a bite of it and just go, it's good, but not as good as Japan.
Not as good as Tokyo. as good as Jiro.
And also you'll find incredible French restaurants too in Japan.
By Japanese people.
By Japanese people, yeah.
That's amazing.
So the cultural appropriation is allowed in that direction.
Because they're killing it. Yeah, they're doing a great job of it.
That's the difference. Yeah. Maybe if you culturally appropriate, but you do a really excellent job, we'll let you off.
Like if the food's probably not good at this place because it's healthy, but like if the food was awesome.
Next news story. Scientists discover cocaine in every shrimp tested from English rivers, study finds. King's College and University of Suffolk researchers caught shrimp from 15 different sites across England's Suffolk County. Which is a more rural area on the coast of northeast of London. Now there's cocaine in all these shrimp. Why could that possibly be?
They say it's not the shrimp's fault, by the way.
Oh yeah, they want to make that very clear.
That's clear.
They're not shaming the shrimp in this.
So that was my first instinct. Maybe these shrimp have a really
like the party.
High pressure job.
What a state.
They just need to let loose.
And your night out. It's stressful being you're gonna get caught up in a net and like just gone. Your life's over.
I know you've been gone for a while, but is cocaine back?
Certainly at Oxford people were taking like study drugs a lot, and I thought that was quite sad, you know, not cocaine but drugs that would like, you know,
Adderall
maybe.
Yeah. They do that
the lobster
America.
Tail is loaded in Adderall.
I don't know, my impression of the city of London now is like everyone does yoga. Maybe I'm completely out of touch.
Is Suffolk County
that's
near?
That's sad. You know, I think that's the new world we're in. Everyone's become like
they do yoga and coke. It's like the same
I was in Boston.
As they're bending over for the downward dog, they take a sniff and then back.
Yeah, it's exactly.
That's a sad state of affairs that London's.
I guess my question is this shrimp that is normally being fished? Like, I've never really heard of British shrimp.
They just took shrimp. They did a study. I don't know if it's being fished or
why
it's being
studied.
Why did
they do this study is my big question. Was there like a lot of people are eating shrimp? Like becoming dying.
I don't know.
Maybe
like someone at all you can eat seafood. Maybe coke. And
maybe they started with the null hypothesis. There are no cheap ways to get cocaine anymore. It's like, well, you just wait. Give me a fishing net and a week off.
Yeah. One of my things I remember from being in England was that the portions, whenever you'd order seafood, were small. And I remember some guy telling me actually once that, that's because the seafood's outrageously expensive here. Don't order shrimp or prawns. They're very expensive. So maybe
it's like a 2-for-1.
Well, maybe they're doing a couple different things. They could be like trying to reduce your appetite while you're eating the shrimp.
Yeah.
Coke. Like dusting it with some coke. Or maybe it's a way to make some more money so they can make the prices cheaper for the fishermen.
I guess. These people are just dumping it in the rivers, I guess. Dumping cocaine in the rivers. Seems like a roundabout way to make you eat less shrimp.
This is reminding me of something which Paul said.
Johnson.
Paul Johnson, who I think we've already.
What are your opinions of him?
Absolutely arsehole. But the reason I mention this is Paul said he listens to the pod if there's someone that he knows on it, because they might mention
something negative about him.
Yeah, and so I'm just guaranteeing that. Yeah.
So he must be an enemy of the pod then. He's not listening every week.
No, we say something negative about him every
week. We're going to make that a new running thing every week in a solo pod.
But he said something about like the American dollar bill is like a... I don't remember the stat. Loaded like 98% have cocaine on them.
I think so.
Something. Yeah. I've made that number up. But
no, it's something that's close.
Post-truth.
But how do like millennials and stuff, like they don't, no one has money with them ever. They're always, they must do coke off keys
or something.
True,
it's not
like,
anymore.
They must not be dollar bills.
They do it off their Coinbase app. Like, next news story.
It's save currency that need to be cokeheads.
Last news story of the week comes to us from CNN. Burger King has a message for McDonald's. Not every meal is happy. Burger King has rolled out a new Whopper meal box called Real Meals.
Oh, yeah.
Labeled with different moods and colors. The packaging comes in five moods. The pissed off in red, blue for sad, salty is teal, yas is purple, and DGAF, which stands for...
Don't give a fuck.
Don't give a fuck in internet speak, is black.
This is part of Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yeah.
Because did you know that Happy Meals are a problematic thing? Like, does that cause pain to people who have mental health
issues? I didn't realize I was marginalized. Happy Meals are marginalizing parts of society.
Especially since they're mostly... Aren't you only allowed to get them if you're a kid?
A Happy Meal?
Yeah.
I don't think they have an age maximum.
No, because the kids' meals at other... I don't go to McDonald's, as we've discussed, but like at Wendy's and other places, like the kids' meals have always been for like...
I think you're supposed to be a kid, but I don't think...
Yeah, it's like 12 and under.
I've like never tried.
A toy?
It's like going to Chuck E. Cheese as an adult. I don't think they tell you no.
Well, they do if you go without a kid. They do.
Oh, you've tried?
No, at Chuck E. Cheese, they have you make you wear a wristband that matches your kids.
Really?
So that your kid can't leave without you. Yeah. And you can't leave. You
can't be there without a kid.
For what it's worth, Wetherspoons in the UK, they don't strictly enforce the sharing platter. It's just a pub chain, but you can buy the sharing platter for one.
That's nice. I like it.
But yeah, do they have different toys?
Here's the problem with this entire this what they're assuming, this Burger King thing, this is a marketing idea,
right? They're gonna make money off of,
they think they're trying to make money by aligning themselves with like mental health,
culturally appropriating mental health.
Yeah. They're assuming that people want to be seen in Burger King in the first place.
Right.
If you really want to be in tune, no one wants to go to Burger King. It's like you're sad, so you're like, I'm going there. I don't want anyone to see me. They should hand out those, the Groucho Marx like, disguise.
Well, the average person at Burger King is either working class or they're a family.
Or
they're drunk college kids or like whatever. They're not like someone who gives a... I don't think a shit about.
But if you are depressed, you don't want a meal that reinforces how depressed you are. You want something that...
Happy.
Yeah, you want a Happy Meal.
I completely agree with your premise that you don't go to these restaurants because things are going well.
Exactly.
Right? But the thing that I resent is they'll put like a special burger on, right? And you're going in feeling like shit and going, maybe my personality is best reflected now with the rustic bacon and Swiss cheese burger. Maybe that particular elevation makes this more sophisticated. Which brings me on to the point which I was making to you last week, that the one thing I genuinely don't get about the States is how prolific free refills are in a country that is staunchly not socialist.
Yes.
But also, you have different prices for small, medium, and large drinks.
So you can get as much as you want.
You get as much as you want.
It's a big...
And it's like $2 extra to get a large.
Because who has the time to go up and get a refill?
Well, that's the only thing I can think of, that you're happy to spend the extra $2 to not suffer the indignity of having to go back up to the free refill machine.
Well, I think it's lazy. I don't think it's
indignity.
This
is the thing. You've been around the country? Because you're not just talking about New York here.
Oh, no. Same in San Francisco.
Yeah, because
that's free refills of kale juice.
And if you go into a real America... Like this, because like, and people in New York don't even realize they don't
go
to Burger King
2 miles that way. I'm pointing towards New Jersey. Yeah. That's real America.
I mean, because like, if you go to like an Applebee's or like these kind of places, they give you like a giant soda. You don't even have to ask them; they just refill it.
They refill before you can even ask. It's halfway done,
Free refills, and so they need the bigger cup because they're going to take it to go a lot of times. Yeah. So they want to get the most for their money. They want the giant 64-ounce. In New York, you don't even like... I get nervous. They refill it. I'm like, am I paying for that? Because it's not... In New York, it's not always free refills.
I have good news for you.
We're not socialists as the rest of that country.
Day one, I went to Shake Shack with Paul Johnson. Do you know Paul Johnson?
Sure.
Real dirtbag.
Oh, man. The worst.
Loves the kiddie porn.
So I was leaving Shake Shack with a cup. And the guy stopped me on the door. He was like, excuse me, sir. And I was like, what have I done? And he went, Did you get that refill before you left?
I double checked.
The staff checked if I'd got the refill.
That's a great restaurant.
They have really good customer service.
Last thing here, this I'm rereading this Blue for Sad Burger King meal. If you're going into Burger King and going like, I want the sad one, you're a bigger loser. We found someone who's a bigger loser than the guy who goes abroad to play video games.
I mean, you might as well just put the person outside and let the drive-thru people run you over and just end it. I mean, or just stick your face in the deep fryer. Because that's just pathetic. Is the wrappings blue? Like
you are on suicide watch. Yeah. They should take your shoelaces away from you the second you order this, so you can't hang yourself.
Because it's just gonna devolve into people making fun of it at the place, which goes against the whole point of mental health awareness.
We should go do this right now. Yeah, we should go to Burger King. By the way, also only available in it's in New York, Austin, Texas, San Francisco, and LA.
All the places where people are overworked and depressed.
They're so self-involved, they convince themselves that
these are places where the people who would care about this are such foodie snobs they would never eat at a Burger King.
Yeah, exactly. So the irony of this
is which all... makes no sense. I got absolutely infuriated by a French person I met in San Francisco.
Oh, get in line.
Who was telling me that the Big Mac isn't delicious. Oh my God. It's like, you can say whatever you want about the Big Mac. Obviously, it's nice.
Delicious.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, it's nice, it's right? Nice.
Did you tell him you've been to Paris?
Yeah, you take him to
San Francisco, you know.
That's the show, everybody. Ollie Horn, thank you for doing it.
Yeah. Oh, my pleasure.
This is a blast. That's it, Cap. Oh, before we get lost, come see me at the Friars Club February 7th. No, June 7th, Friday night.
February 7th.
I just picked a month.
You know it's the 7th. Every month on the 7th, go to the Friars Club.
Yeah.
You're getting right one of these days.
New York City, 7:30, 9:30. Get your tickets now, turnsparks.com. Cap, what should we do?
Get lost.
Get lost.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.